Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the Golden State, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be, on the internet and around the world. My name is Lauren Cartagena, and welcome to another edition of Radio Pangea. We are an independent news outlet that reports the news for what it is, just the truth. That's all we're in search of. We're not in search of political ideology, spin, bent, any of that stuff. We just want to report what it is that people all over the world yearn to have, which is freedom and the ability to make their own decisions, whether it be right or wrong, and to suffer the consequences by which they live their lives. Simple as that. Simple as that. Well, in Britain, they became the first country to formally license an in vitro fertilization treatment designed to create babies from, get this, three people. Critics of the treatment say a dangerous step will lead to the creation of genetically modified designer babies. In a long-awaited decision, Britain's Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority gave the final go-ahead for a treatment known as mitochondrial transfer, which doctors say could help prevent incurable inherited diseases. Britain's parliament voted last year to change its laws to allow the treatment if and when they were ready for licensing. This latest HFEA decision means the first babies created by the technique in Britain could be born as early as 2017. The technique involves intervening in the fertilization process to remove mitochondria, which acts as tiny energy-generating batteries inside cells, and which, if faulty, can cause fatal heart problems, liver failure, brain disorders, blindness, and muscular dystrophy. The treatment is designed to help families with mitochondrial diseases, incurable conditions passed down the maternal line that affect around 1 in 6,500 children worldwide. The treatment is known as three-parent IVF because the babies born from genetically modified embryos would have DNA from a mother, a father, and from a female donor. Research teams around the world have tested and trailed the techniques in a series of preclinical experiments, but as of yet have not been used to treat patients in Britain. The world's first and so far only known mitochondrial transfer baby was born early this year after U.S. doctors working at a clinic in Mexico helped Georgian couples conceive using a three-way treatment. David King of the campaign group Human Genetics Alert said that HFEA's move would allow the use of dangerous and medically unnecessary technology. This decision opens the door to the world of GM designer babies, he said later in a statement. North Korea. Well, their state media says that Canadian officials have met with a detained Ontario pastor who has been sentenced to life in prison in North Korea. Hyun Soon Lim, a pastor for the Light Korean Presbyterian Church of Mississauga, Ontario, Canada, was sentenced by a North Korean court to life in prison with hard labor for what it called crimes against the state. Pyongyang's Korean Central News Agency said a Canadian government delegation led by Sarah Taylor, director for the North Asia and Oceania for Global Affairs in Canada, arrived in North Korea for a three-day visit to discuss Lim's case and other issues. The agency said the Canadian officials met Lim but provided no further details. Lim is convinced that Pyongyang Supreme Court Lim was convicted by Pyongyang Supreme Court for trying to use religion to destroy North Korea's system and helping U.S. and South Korean authorities lure and abduct North Korean citizens. North Korea is often accused of using foreign detainees in a way to win concessions from other countries. The country is locked in a major standoff with the international community over its expanding nuclear and weapons programs. Lim, who is in his 60s, has been held since February of 2015. Lim's relatives have said the pastor, who was in his 60s, traveled in January of 2015 on a regular humanitarian mission to North Korea, where they say Lim has made more than 100 trips to North Korea since 1997, and that his trips were about helping people and were not political in nature. Lim started the Light Korean Presbyterian Church nearly 3 decades ago, shortly after he immigrated from South Korea. He grew the congregation from about a dozen people in 86 to more than 3,000 members. He also runs a smaller church in downtown Toronto that caters to young people. North Korea is also holding at least 2 Americans for alleged espionage, subversion, and other charges. Korean-American Kim Tong-chol is serving a 10-year prison term with hard labor, while University of Virginia undergraduate Otto Warmbier has received 15 years. In January, North Korea announced it would handle all issues with the United States in line with a wartime law in response to U.S. sanctions that target leader Kim Jong-un. It has not been elaborated on what wartime law means, although analysts say that it suggests North Korea could deal with U.S. detainees in a harsher manner. And you better believe they are. If you're an American in North Korea and you're held hostage right now, Godspeed to you. Honestly. A Muslim woman in New York was arrested after filing a false police report claiming that she had been harassed by a group of white pro-Trump supporters. The 18-year-old confessed that she had made up the story on December 1st because she was taunted on the subway by men who called her a terrorist and shouted Donald Trump in her face. Yasmin Siweed also claimed that when she attempted to move away from her alleged harassers, one of them followed her and attempted to grab her hijab. According to the NY Daily News, Yasmin Siweed said she lied because she did not want to get into trouble for breaking her curfew. As punishment, Saweed's parents allegedly shaved her head. Nothing happened, and there was no victim, a police source said to the Daily News. We dedicated a lot of resources to this, and don't get me wrong, this is what we do. But we had guys going back and forth looking for video witnesses, and we couldn't find anything, end quote. The Baruch college student was charged with filing a false police report. She was also charged with obstructing governmental administration. Both charges are misdemeanors in the state of New York. Whenever there are these rare instances of false reports, it's still an allegation at this point. It's used by the growing Islamophobic community to delegitimize and undermine many of the legitimate anti-Muslim incidents, said a spokesperson for the Anti-Muslim Defamation League. Police initially believed the inconsistencies in Saweed's story were due to lapses by an individual who had just been traumatized. However, their doubts increased when detectives could not find witnesses or any significant video to back up her claims. A week after the alleged subway incident, Saweed left her home and was reported missing on December 8th and found the next day, triggering even more suspicion. When questioned by detectives, Saweed admitted to lying to throw off her parents, who were angry because she was dating a Christian. Saweed's father told the Daily News he did not know why his daughter had lied. Despite Saweed's false report, officials say there has been a rise of hate-inspired crimes in New York and throughout the U.S. since Donald Trump won election. According to police statistics in New York now, listen to this, hate crimes more than doubled in November from 20 cases in 2015 to more than 43 in 2016, out of a population of about 8 million people. 43 incidents of hate crime out of 7 million people. Okay, yeah, there may be some race relations in this country that need to be shored up, but when you have New York City, the largest metropolitan area in the United States, with 7-8 million people, and only 43 incidents of a hate crime, come on. I mean, yeah, it's not as good as 20 in 2015, but with so many people, it's interesting that it's only 43. Now, I don't know if that's a made-up number or not, but according to police statistics, it's a true number. Only 43. Moving on. So, have you heard about Standing Rock? Did you hear about how the Native Americans, the Sioux Indians, stood their ground and stood down the United States government? Why? Because they feared that a pipeline that was proposed to run through their land could leak and rupture. Well, it turns out, guess what? There really is a leaky pipe in North Dakota. Cleanup crews have discovered about 1,250 barrels of the 3,110 barrels of oil that have leaked into a North Dakota creek following a spill on the Belle Fourche pipeline. A leak discovered on December 5th spilled an estimated 4,200 barrels of oil from a 6-inch pipeline which runs through North Dakota. About 1,100 barrels remain trapped in the soil, according to the North Dakota Department of Health. Furthermore, a container band has been set up Ash Coulee Creek, where the rest of the oil has migrated to keep it from entering the Little Missouri River, which is the same river that the Standing Rock Sioux tribe claimed could have been poisoned by another pipeline. Sure enough, it is poisoned. True Companies. The pipeline owner has deployed more than 130 personnel to work the site and aid in the cleanup. Crews were dealing with the worse than normal wind chill factor, which requires a heavier emphasis on keeping workers safe and warm. How about keeping the pipelines leak-free so that these workers don't have to be kept safe and warm? The North Dakota spill came after months of protests in the state against the Dakota Access Pipeline by Native Americans and environmental groups that worry a pipeline leak could contaminate the water. Well, voila, there it is. Native American people weren't so crazy after all, were they? In other news, in Colorado, a tiny school district in central Colorado has voted to allow teachers or other employees at its two schools to carry concealed handguns on the job if they volunteer to serve double duty as security officers in case of an emergency. The Board of Education for Hanover School District number 28 voted 3-2 now to approve a resolution, said Mark McPherson, the board president. McPherson, who voted against the plan, said it was inspired less by the fear of a shooting rampage on campus than by the district's remote location some 30 miles from the nearest sheriff's station. The written resolution, however, says in part that it was drafted in light of recent national events, apparently in reference to a string of shootings on school campuses. McPherson said it was a coincidence that the measure was approved on the third anniversary of the December 14, 2002 shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, in which 20 students and 6 staff members were shot and killed. Hanover School District number 28 is comprised of one elementary school and one combined junior and high school, serving a total of about 245 students. Each school has about 10 teachers. Now, according to the resolution, any teacher or staff member with a permit to carry a concealed weapon can volunteer extra duty as a security officer, but the employee must then complete training before being allowed to bring the gun to campus. McPherson said it was not yet clear how many of the 20 or so teachers in the district would sign up to be volunteer security officers, but the resolution did not set a limit on how many could carry weapons. Well, what's worse than a gun at school? A disgruntled teacher with a gun at school. In Massachusetts today, Massachusetts became the first state in a densely populated U.S. Northeast to legalize marijuana for recreational use. Yes, a step that advocates say could help spread marijuana's acceptance across the United States. The state is one of three where ballot measures legalizing recreational use of marijuana passed on November 8, along with California and Nevada, while voters in Arizona rejected it and a Maine ballot is still being recounted. The Massachusetts measure legalizing the use of marijuana by adults 21 and older on private places passed by a 54-46% margin, easily overcoming the opposition of prominent state officials in both parties. Massachusetts is now one of eight U.S. states that have legalized use of the recreational drug since voters in Washington and Colorado first approved the idea 4 years ago in 2012. But the measure approved last month does not allow the drug to be sold in the state legally until 2018, a delay that advocates say was intended to give state officials time to determine how to implement the new law. Distances between cities in the Northeast are smaller than that in the West, leading some to suggest that Massachusetts could motivate neighboring states to consider smaller steps given how easy it will be for people to cross state lines and acquire the cannabis. Neighboring Rhode Island Governor, Democratic Gina Raimondo, has said she will more closely consider the idea of legalization following Massachusetts' move. In an October poll by Gallup, it showed that 60% of Americans now support the legalization of recreational use of marijuana. Even more approve the idea of legislating marijuana for medical use, a step that 28 states, that's over half, have now taken. Nonetheless, the drug is illegal under federal law, and U.S. President-elect Trump, who takes office on January 20th, has sent conflicting messages about his views on it. During the campaign, Trump, a Republican, said that marijuana legalization was best left to the states. Now that he's been elected, his pick for Attorney General, U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, has criticized Democratic President Barack Obama's administration for not enforcing the federal ban aggressively enough. You're listening to Radio Pangea. When we return, get this. Well, people in Spain, the Catalan region, want to secede and move away from Spain as fast as they can. Also, we're going to talk about what's going to be done with the Islamic State known as ISIS under the restructuring, and also what's going to happen with the changing of the guard when the Obama administration leaves and the Trump administration comes in. And our feature story, a family in Nevada who's fighting for their governmental land because the federal government wants it to be part of Area 51. All this and more when we return. You are listening to the one, the only, Radio Pangea.
Until the philosophy which old one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war. that until they are no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation. Until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Mr. War, that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. This a war, that until that day, the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality, will remain but a fleeting illusion to be pursued, but never attained. Now everywhere is war. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that holds our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, Baba human bondage have been toppled, utterly destroyed, where everywhere is war. War in the east, war in the west, war up north, war down south, war, rumors of a war, and until that day, the African continent will not know peace. We Africans will fight, we find it necessary, and we know we shall win, and we are confident in the victory of good over evil, good over evil.
And we are back with Radio Pangea. Want to say, if you like what you hear, please check us out at youtube.com/Radio Pangea. Also, we are available for comments, questions at Pangea Foundation. That's spelled PANGAEA Foundation at gmail.com. Pangea Foundation, all one word, at gmail.com. Moving on. So, with the new transition that's coming between the changing of the guard of the President Barack Obama and now Trump administration, if the Islamic State group is to be defeated and prevented from reappearing under some new guise, the root causes behind its birth and growth must be addressed. In the face of an uprising that they catalyzed by channeled anger, frustration, resentment of a significant part of the world, a uniquely military response will never suffice, however impressive its gains on the ground, according to terror experts. Yet the underlying problem in many parts of the Arab world, starting with chaos, poor governance, and poverty, run very deep. Widespread new unrest in dire proportions seems a near certainty, and only an extraordinary campaign of ideology pushback might eventually provide itself relief. Quote, with a new U.S. administration coming, there is an instinctive, we've got to be tougher, former CIA chief Michael Hayden said at the conference, sponsored by the Jamestown Foundation think tank. But if we go about our ability to kill people, well, we'd have been done 14 years ago. We can't kill our way out of this, he said. If we do nothing except get tougher, we'll have to get tougher multiple times in the near future, he added. Like several other security experts, Hayden, who also once headed the National Security Agency, insisted that until underlying causes that prompt Muslims to join jihad movements are addressed, the attraction of radical Islam will endure in the ranks of its fighters and leaders will continually be replenished. The first challenge, he said, is that the Arab world today is in chaos. It is descending into an abyss of hell that we are only beginning to see the outlines of. Well, that's because he had a major part in shaping how the Middle East is when he used to be in positions of power. Michael Hayden, former CIA, NSA chief, running around destabilizing Syria and the Middle East. While the Arab world accounts for only 5% of Earth's population, Hayden said, nearly half of the attacks of terrorism last year were in Arab countries. At the same time, key indicators like youth unemployment remain sharply negative, with little reason to expect improvement. He added that communism was not alien to you and me. It's a Western philosophy created by a German in London. It's ours. We have legitimacy, but we do not have legitimacy for the deep battle against radical Islam. Our influence in this deep fight is very limited. Yeah, so is his thinking. Michael Hayden, former CIA chief and NSA leader. Well, from one extreme to another, here is Joe Sheehan. Now, who is he? He is in the fight of his life to save his family's Nevada mine from being swallowed up by the federal government agencies that want to incorporate it into the mysterious Area 51. Now, technically, Sheehan's family no longer even holds title to the Groom Mine, which his family has owned for 130 years. The federal government took the deed through eminent domain after first offering the Sheehans $330,000, a price family lawyers call embarrassingly low. The family is fighting back in federal court, but if the Sheehans and Uncle Sam can't agree on the value, it could wind up before a jury. So far, the family has not been paid for the land. Initially, the family was sued by the federal government in September of 2015 in a compliant case of eminent domain. A few days later, the government then filed a motion to take over the entire property. The mine hasn't been in full operation since 1954, but until fall of 2015, family members went out there from time to time to blast for minerals. The 400 acres of land sits almost 6,000 feet above sea level with panoramic views of the surrounding Groom Mountain Range and borders of the Nevada Test and Training Range, which includes, you got it, Area 51. According to Sheehan, his family's land has always had been highly sought after by the U.S. Air Force because it is always looking to expand its flight testing range. Sheehan has said that officials started showing up unannounced on the properties in the 1940s and 50s and were intimidating his grandparents. According to the Las Vegas Review, on January 27, 1951, the U.S. detonated the first above-ground test on land next to the gold mine, the Groom Mine. In the winter of 2014, government officials from the State Department of Defense and the Air Force approached the Sheehan family about purchasing the land. At the time, family members had never had the property appraised, but says the family thought offers of $2.5 million, $5.2 million, and $1.5 million from the Air Force were too low and rejected them all. Interesting to know that through an independent appraiser, due to its proximity to Area 51 and the mineral rights underneath the land, an independent appraiser has concluded that the real value of the land is worth $44 to $116 million. Yes, that's right. And they only want to give him $333,000 after offering him between $2.4, $5.2, and then $1.5 million. That's what they want to give him. The land's worth $44 to $116 million, but that's the government for you. The case is currently in discovery. Sheehan says that he is a God-fearing American and does not want to be portrayed as unpatriotic and wants his family to receive the just compensation that it believes it deserves. And with that, You know the news. We are Radio Pangea. Thank you very much for listening. I am your host, Lauren Cartagena. And as always, our motto here, please think for yourself.